Knowledge at Wharton here on Sirius XM 111 Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. We are with you each and every weekday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific, and then our show replays in the evenings at 10 p.m. East, 7 p.m. out on the West Coast. Interesting story coming out of the Supreme Court, just being announced a little bit ago. The Supreme Court has ruled that states can now have online retailers, force online retailers to collect sales tax from consumers that are not in that specific state. It has the opportunity to be a very important ruling in the retail sector moving forward, and we'll be trying to delve into that a little bit more coming up in a future show here on Knowledge at Wharton here on Sirius XM 111. So again, the Supreme Court has ruled that states can require internet tax collection from online retailers, and should note that quite a few of the online retailers, their stock prices are significantly lower in the first hour of trading because of this ruling by the Supreme Court. Also, a reminder to visit the SiriusXM website to find out more, or I should say to download the app so that you can listen to all the great channels here on the SiriusXM network. Go to SiriusXM.com/app to find out more. NASA is getting ready to send astronauts into space again from the United States. In the last few years, astronauts left from Russia to go to the space station, but the big difference now with NASA will be them working with various entrepreneurs who are developing the spacecraft that will be taking astronauts to space. So what does this mean for this modern-day space race? Greg Autry is an assistant professor of clinical entrepreneurship at USC, University of Southern California. He's also founding director of the Commercial Spaceflight Initiative at the school, and he is on the Commercial Space Transportation Advisory Committee with the FAA. He joins us on the phone, as will in just a minute Franz Vonderdunk, who's a professor of space law, space, cyber, and telecommunications law at the University of Nebraska. And Franz joins us as well. Greg, Franz, great to both have you back on the show. Thank you for your time.
Sure, glad to be here.
Thank you. Greg, give us your background on this, because this becomes, I think, a very important topic here, that NASA went away from this for a significant period of time and has decided that, you know, that it is now the time to get back into them sending astronauts into space.
Well, to be honest, this is something that they've been working on for a long time. It became clear after the 2003 Columbia shuttle disaster that system was not safe, was not reliable, and was very expensive to operate despite having some really great features. So NASA decided they needed to replace that. They had a large program in place under the Bush administration called ARES to do deep space exploration, but it was kind of overkill for getting to the space station, which we have a large investment in. So they initiated the program to, first of all, resupply the station with commercial firms called COTS, and back in 2004, and that was really, really successful in doing that. And SpaceX and Orbital ATK now do that. And the follow-on CCDEV, Commercial Crew, started as early as 2008, and they've been working on it for quite some time. It just takes a while to build human-rated spacecraft and get NASA to sign off on them. So that's really what's been going on. It's not that it's a new idea, but it has been in progress for nearly a decade.
So what kind of a timeline, then, are we looking at right now?
We're scheduled to see test launches of those vehicles, Boeing's CST-100 on a ULA Atlas V and SpaceX's Crew Dragon on one of their Falcon 9s this year, late this year. Whether we'll see people fly this year or not, I'm not sure, but if it's not right at the end of this year, it'll be early next year.
Franz, then where the benefits of this moving forward for both the entrepreneur side, but also for NASA, what are the greatest areas that you think really are impacted here?
Well, ultimately, the idea is, of course, that by using private sector knowledge and understanding and entrepreneurship, you can bring the cost of getting into space, including getting humans into space, down by perhaps several dimensions. And obviously that's both in NASA's interest, as long as their safety requirements are met, and it's in the interest of the private sector if they get a full rubber stamp of approval of safety when it comes to flying other humans, because obviously those private sector operators are willing to fly everyone in space as long as they pay, you know, whether it's a tourist or a scientist or a billionaire or whatever.
Greg, this goes, I think, also to a part of a bigger discussion that we've had on this show from time to time, and this is more on your entrepreneurship hat, is the fact that there are many companies out there and many entrepreneurs out there that obviously have ways to be able to get projects done, to be able to bring forth ideas, and as Franz just alluded to, be able to do it in a more effective and maybe more cost-effective manner. So it's not just that this idea has an opportunity to be very successful, but this idea in general has a possibility of being very successful for a variety of different business sectors around the United States.
Yeah, this is really important to realize that one of the key things we've established here is competition. So in the COTS program, we had three competitors. One was eliminated for lack of performance, which was a really good call on NASA's part and demonstrated they were serious about holding companies accountable to milestones. But we had two, Orbital ATK and SpaceX, and we had technical redundancy as well as market competition. And that was really important because in 2014, Orbital had a rocket explode on the launch pad at Wallops in Virginia, and they were unable to do their resupply mission. SpaceX was able to step in with a different system. There was no reason to shut the SpaceX system down because of the Orbital launch and take care of the problem. Then SpaceX had a failure themselves the following year, and Orbital was back online using a rocket from United Launch Alliance. So this is a level of redundancy that NASA has never had before, and that was fantastic. And the market competition between the two not only helped NASA keep prices lower, but it has brought back a huge amount of business to the United States in commercial launches. In 2010, we had 0% of the international market for that, meaning if Israel or Thailand or some direct TV company in Malaysia wanted to launch a satellite, we didn't get any. In 2018, it looks like we're going to get about 65% of that market, and that is entirely due to the NASA's investment, very small investment, in the COTS program.
So what's the working relationship like now with NASA and these companies? And I say that, you know, moving forward, what level of oversight does NASA as an agency have to or not have to have moving forward in these types of projects?
Yeah, well, I worked at NASA on the agency review team during the presidential transition, and yep. I was the interim White House liaison there and spent a lot of time working on both sides of that issue, which was kind of interesting for an academic. It's a very good working relationship. These companies are being held to very serious standards, in fact, higher standards than they're used to in the commercial sector, because NASA is a very precise agency with a history of a lot of oversight. That said, when they do a purely commercial launch, NASA doesn't have anything to do with it. The Federal Aviation Administration's Office of Commercial Space Transportation does. And that agency has worked very, very well with the private sector. So well, in fact, that you find companies that could be foreign, like Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic or Virgin Orbit or Rocket Lab out of New Zealand, choosing to come to the United States and be U.S. companies simply so they can be under our regulatory umbrella, which works very well.
844-942-7866 is the number if you would like to join in. We are talking with Greg Autry of the University of Southern California, Franz Vonderdunk, who is of the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. We are talking about the working relationship with NASA and various space entrepreneurs. 844-942-7866. Or if you'd like, send us a comment via Twitter at BizRadio111 or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. Franz, Greg kind of alluded to it a second ago, but get your thoughts on it as well, is the fact that seemingly this feels like we are entering an amazing new era for NASA in terms of what they will be doing as a business entity moving forward.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I think it was a very smart idea to have them support the private sector developments as described by Greg. And as he indicated, it made a watershed change over the last couple of years. And what you actually see is that while some of the original initiatives were non-US, I mean, Richard Branson is a UK guy, obviously, and there was an initiative in the Netherlands, But everything then started to center on the United States, because that's where, partly because that's where the regulatory developments were moving fastest in the right direction, and partly because of NASA being around and being.
Franz? I think we lost Franz. We'll have to try and get back with Franz. Greg, you were also very close to this concept of Space Force that is being talked about quite a bit. Let's not call it wars.
Let's not call.
Okay, go ahead.
Or you said Space Force. I'm
correct.
Sorry.
Yes.
Correct? Oh, I thought I heard wars.
Oh, no, force. I'm sorry. Okay. Yes, force, F-O-R-C-E, that is being talked about quite a bit. And this is another, I guess, aspect of this next level of space race that we'll be talking about, whether or not there will be some sort of protection entity that we need to consider about for space moving forward.
Yeah, it's really important to realize there, of course, already are many military operations in space. The U.S. military budget for space, although it's not officially public, everybody knows it's bigger than the NASA budget and has been for a long time. Other countries like Russia and China are particularly aggressive in that way.
Right.
Some of the things the U.S. has developed for the military, like the global positioning system, have been of incredible benefit to the world economy and saving lives and all that. So often it's been money well spent, but the Air Force may not be the best management tool for that military space interest going forward, because it's a very different domain. And just the way the Air Force was split off from the Army Air Corps in 1947, at some point it makes sense for the Space Force to have its own structure. It's hard now for officers in the Space Command at the Air Force to get promoted through the line in a field dominated by pilots and aircraft-oriented folks. It's hard for them to get the attention they need to budgetary matters when the F-35 runs $163 billion over budget. So breaking that out has some significant advantages.
Franz, where are you on the idea of a space force or a space guard, as it is being referred to?
Yeah, well, I would basically say that international law doesn't say anything about whatever you call it. It's the pudding is all in the eating, so it depends on what is actually going to happen. As Greg said, there has already been a lot of military presence in outer space. So far, it's been exclusively defensive and in the monitoring side, and that's certainly allowed as far as international law is concerned. So if that is just beefed up, there's no single problem with that. If it is, by contrast, going to be changed into threatening other nations because the United States would not like their commercial operations in space or has another issue, then obviously other international legal elements come in play, like the prohibition to use force and stuff like that. But I think it's a bit early to say what this space force is actually going to mean. And following up on what Greg said, certainly from the U.S. perspective, it makes sense to establish this as a sixth independent pillar of the U.S. armed forces.
844-942-7866, or if you'd like, send us a comment via Twitter at BizRadio111 or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. Joined on the phone by Franz Vonderdunk of the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, Greg Autry of the University of Southern California. So, Greg, I mean, with what we're seeing with NASA and these space entrepreneurs and the potential of this idea of a space guard, seemingly it feels like we are getting closer and closer to almost a limitless time of business operation using space as the platform.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the most exciting time in space since the Apollo program. It's very palpable within the space community, and I find my students are now very excited about space in a way they weren't during the shuttle program, when, you know, every few months the shuttle went up and went to the space station and came back down. Not that a lot of good work wasn't done there, but there's just so much variety going on. There's excitement. We're going back to the moon. We're actually getting ready to do things on Mars in a commercial way. And the engagement at the DOD is actually a very, very positive thing. So it's exciting to see Congress, the White House, the regulators, people at NASA, all are just very clearly excited about space right now.
Franz?
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree to that. I mean, it's even broader than that. I mean, it follows upon a measure of commercialization and privatization of space endeavors, which also goes into stuff like space mining and space tourism, which certainly attracts the interest of many more people than were interested in space 10 or 20 years ago, including young people. And in addition to the sort of national focus of what Greg said, that also applies internationally, because you see more and more countries and more operators from different countries basically doing the same. Of course, they are following way behind in an overall context, an overall sense. They're following way behind the U.S. efforts for a number of reasons. But even globally speaking, you see this broadening and deepening of interest in space for a lot of practical, including commercial applications down on Earth.
But how close, Greg, do you think we would be to, and obviously part of this is the discussion, as Franz alluded to, of making the ability to go to space something that is more of a norm for a majority of people, not everybody, but a higher number of people here in the United States, taking a little bit more of the economic equation out of it. How realistically close are we to that? I mean, it feels like we're still probably well down the road from that happening.
No, that really? Might happen before the NASA astronauts get off. Both Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos' company, and Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic are on track to potentially fly space tourists this year. And that's really exciting. Now, these are short suborbital flights, but these are average people that have to pony up a couple $100,000 maybe, and they're going to go.
Right. And that maybe there's the distinction in that, you know, a couple $100,000 for some people in this country is, you know, just a, you know, it's like leaving a tip at dinner. But, you know, for a lot of people, you know, to be able to have a flight where we're talking about realistically, and maybe we don't get to that point, Greg, but, you know, realistically costs that are maybe slightly above what we're seeing now for a plane flight.
I don't think that several hundred dollars is likely to happen anytime in my lifetime,
right.
But I do think we could see it in the sub $100,000 range relatively quickly as the economies of scale build up. But to be clear, although a couple $100,000 is a lot of money, it won't buy you a home in D.C. or California. And I know people who have taken out loans and mortgaged their homes in order to buy a ticket to space, because it is a single lifetime transformational experience from their point of view. So it isn't just the super rich who are dropping that money down. There are some pretty average people who are making a life sacrifice to do it, but it's not out of their reach.
How does this, Franz, how does this also change from a technological standpoint, going back specifically to NASA working with companies like Boeing and SpaceX? The technological component, I would think, is a very unique one because of the fact that these companies are being relied on more to be able to provide the physical infrastructure to be able to make these trips into space.
Yeah, well, that's a process. I mean, it took NASA a couple of years before they were able, together with the FAA, which is actually still the agency to regulate those flights, to agree on not having NASA look into every nook and cranny of what the industry was building, but applying much more generic safety standards. I mean, that was sort of contrary to the way NASA operated itself, and before it was willing and able to trust its astronauts pretty soon then to those private operators, there had to be a mentality change. But, I mean, that's something that we've seen, if you take a bigger perspective, we've seen in other industries as well, which started to be paid for by the government, and then at a certain point in time, you realize that you're much better off if you allow private operators to provide the service, of course, subject to a certain level of safety and security regulation, and then be happy to just buy a ticket for your astronaut rather than buy the whole space flight and the launch vehicle, et cetera, et cetera. And again, that took a little bit of time and a lot of talking and a lot of mentality change. I think key was also the basic prohibition on the side of the previous administration, the previous president, for NASA to go to focus on Earth orbit, low Earth orbit transportation. What, of course, helped also was then the increasing political problems, because at the time that decision was made, the only vehicle which was able to transport U.S. astronauts to the space station was the Russian vehicle. And at the time the decision was made, that didn't seem too much of a problem. But then, of course, all these other things happened, like the Krim and Ukraine and stuff like that. So the Russian-U.S. Relations have, of course, gone sour to a considerable extent, which made it ever more necessary for NASA to speed up the private process and make sure that the sooner the better, private entities can take over from the Russians in a sense.
Well, Greg, the first group of astronauts that will be going up, they will be, I'm guessing, people that have gone up in space prior?
Not necessarily. I think you'll see a mix of some veterans and some non-veterans, because frankly, having either ridden on or operated the shuttle doesn't necessarily give you any advantage over the systems that Boeing or SpaceX have put together. They're very different capsule style systems. But yeah, it will be a mix.
844-942-7866. Or if you'd like, send us a comment via Twitter at BizRadio111 or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. Greg Autry of the University of Southern California joining us on the phone along with Franz Vonderdunk of the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. It feels like then, Franz, that not only is this going to be an exciting time for people to kind of watch and be reaggregated into space travel, but it obviously, when you're talking about a business entity here, not only are companies like SpaceX going to benefit, but I would think a whole host of other companies are going to be, you know, very interested in getting in on this occurrence.
Absolutely.
And this business coming forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And that also raises a whole new host of new issues as well. I mean, if you look at very black and white, very short, the old situation, you just had a handful of countries going into space. So every problem, every issue was basically something to be solved at the diplomatic level. Now we have private operators left, right, above and below. They don't have diplomatic negotiation tools at their disposal. They want to know what the law is, what their rights is, and want to make use of them. So I think we will see a lot more lawyers getting involved in, I'm of course pleading a little bit for my own parakeet, but we'll see a lot more lawyers getting involved in the next 10 years.
Greg, final
Things
comment?
They're always better with lawyers.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but I will leave that. That's a discussion for another time. Gentlemen,
he's right.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Greg, Franz, as always, great to catch up with you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Greg Autry, the University of Southern California, Franz Vonderdunk of the University of Nebraska. We will take a break. Second hour of our show coming up in just a minute. After the break, we look at China and its policy changes surrounding environmental and whether or not they have been successful so far. A report out of MIT dug deeper into this. We'll look at that coming up in just a minute. Sirius XM 111 Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School.